Dude, so here we are, a monkey podcast. Yes?
Yeah, first and foremost, before movies, there are monkeys. And sometimes, right. The two shall meet. And in this case, at least for the next few weeks, the monkeys and the movies will be melding together, intermingling like a monkey in a vine, a banana in a peel. We hope this theme has a lot of audience appeal. So, folks, that was the rushed intro, and this is Movies for When, and we smashed the record button because as soon as Denny answered the call, it was time for silly jokes about monkeys, and we were getting in the weeds of stuff that should be recorded and not just between us. How are you doing?
We're really, I'm better now. I'm at my best when I'm with my monkeys, you know, I think when I talk about my monkeys, I mean you, the Movies for When family, and even, you know, I've said this on the Instagram, and I'm going to say it once, and I'm going to say it every time it comes up. Uh-huh. The official position of this podcast is that there is no distinction between monkey and ape. We will not be addressing this further. That is our official position. And I welcome everyone under that umbrella, the simians. We're all simians inside, Greg. Some of us just evolved out of our tails, which I've always felt sucked, personally. I would like a Saiyan tail.
Even just like a little bit of a tail would be nice. Speaking of little monkeys.
Oh my goodness!
Baby visitor!
Oh my goodness! Leah has entered the frame with the baby. Oh my god.
Baby boy.
It's like Greg tickling a smaller Greg that's delighted to see Greg. It's so cool.
Bye, little monkey.
Oh my god. Welcome to the cutest moment in the history of Movies for When. We caught those sweet little baby laughs. And like, dude, you guys should have seen the way Greg's kid lit up when he saw him. Like, aww. He is delighted to see his dad. It was amazing.
We've been calling him our little monkey, and it just... He loves to, like, you know, you hold him like this, you've got him on your arm, and he's just, like, grabbing your shirt and just looking around going, ha, ha, climbing you like a little monkey. I love the little guy.
He's adorable, man. He's adorable.
Thank you. He's starting to look more and more like Mom. He's got her eyes for sure. I contributed the skin tone. I told my wife that I gentrified her family tree. So,
Jesus, how does she feel about that?
She thinks it's funny.
Good.
Hopefully everyone else does too. Where were we? Monkeys?
Monkeys, man. We were just saying that monkeys really bring out the best in us, and mm-hmm. I think we just... Why let the best of us go unrecorded like it did for so many months, Greg?
That's right. No kidding. Let's rectify it right now. Folks, Movies for When You Want to See a Monkey, Part 2, is here for you. And our first movie that we're going to be covering in this revamped theme, I think it was like the fourth episode we did was the first round. The first movie we're going to do this time is Monkey Trouble from 1994. It is a Prime rental. Ugh! I've got the dog in my lap, too. He snuck in here with the baby.
Anton, look at you, little gentleman.
The gang's all here.
Oh, my goodness.
The gang is all here. Oh, my goodness.
Anton is, like, in the frame like a Muppet that Greg is puppeteering. It's really adorable.
He's very Muppet-like. That is a good point. Before we get into Monkey Trouble, Denny, what else did you watch this week? Or at least since we last recorded. We don't have to do all of it. I know there's probably a lot of things. I had a lot of things. I'm going to save some for next week. So, you know, I'll let you kick it off.
The first thing I watched was you puppeteering Anton's little puppy paws, that whole monologue, and it was hilarious.
It's a fun thing to do. It's like making them dance.
We have just, like, raised the bar for cuteness on this podcast just mere minutes into our fifth season. I have never had so much, like, warm, fuzzy, like, everything is okay with the world feelings while we were recording this than just seeing, like, Greg's little parade of his family come through. It was so heartwarming. It was awesome.
That's what I love to hear.
We've started recording because we thought our jokes about monkeys were so funny, but look what we actually ended up capturing, dude. Mm-hmm. God.
Everything
thank
else.
Thank you for our own self-aggrandizing behavior. We have not told one funny monkey joke yet, by my count, since we started recording.
Correct, yeah. That's okay, though. Well, yeah, I was asking. What else you watched this week, if you want to get into that. We'll go back into podcast mode now, I guess. No more family time.
So I watched some stuff that came out this year, and I watched some stuff that's over 100 years old. And I watched some stuff in between. And I even, for once in my life, I am ahead on our podcast. I watched the movie for next week.
Very nice.
And I watched another movie in theaters that I was really surprised to find out is not related to it in any way whatsoever. Did you know that?
The Stephen King, The Monkey?
Yeah.
Okay, it's not related to what?
Monkey Shines. Man, we are rusty. You asked, what have I been watching? And here I am talking about what I'm gonna watch, Greg. We're out of sync. I'm rusty. I forgot what to do in this segment. So, I watched... I'll start us out with Stop Making Sense, which is the type of thing we don't usually cover. It is a concert film. Mm-hmm. You're a huge music guy. I'm curious if you're aware of this.
This is something like this. It's a documentary, right? Or like a concert video.
It's a concert shot for film of the Talking Heads. And it is one of the greatest testaments to live performance I have ever seen.
It's like, it came out. Well, like, how old is... I don't know. It just came out a couple years ago, or is it, like...
Stop Making Sense?
Yeah, what is...
No, it's... I think it was not released, is what I want to say. It's a 1984 movie.
Okay. I thought it came out, like, last year or the year before, and, like, everybody
I remember it being in theaters, yeah.
Everybody was talking about it. I was like, people that just... I didn't know you knew what the Talking Heads were. And it's just, like, I didn't know what it was. I don't really... know who the Talking Heads are. I don't know why everyone freaked out about it, and I still don't get it, but
I think it must have had like an I think it had an anniversary tour or something. In 2021 it was inducted into the United States National Film Registry by the Library of Congress, so I think around that time a special 4K was re-released in theaters in September of 2023 by A24. It's been around the whole time, but probably the reason we know about it is because of the recent A24 campaign is what I would probably guess.
That's the only reason I know about it, and because everyone lost their mind over it and I had no idea what they were talking about.
I heard it was like a concert movie and I was like, who gives a shit, you know? Like, I just, that's just like a, unless I'm on like really great indica, you know, like it's just not something that really, it's not something I would normally count as a movie. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's just a different medium. And I don't know, for some reason I saw this online looking up like vaporwave 90s looking shit, I think. And, man, it is, it's just truly something special. Like, it's just, it's a whole single run performance. What's so crazy is that like, they're doing these like phenomenal things musically and just like adding and removing instruments and voices, and they're doing these insane dances, and it's all so iconic, and they are all dressed like regular fucking people. Like, they just look like regular fucking dudes on stage, like not dressed to perform at all. But it was a truly, truly awesome thing that's like totally not on my beaten path. The really, really old shit I watched was, I believe, 1921's The Phantom Carriage, which was really, really good silent movie, Greg. A really good silent movie. They did really cool stuff with, you know, like superimposing film and like shots of ghost and things like that. And it's this really cool, like, trying to save a rotten man's soul kind of narrative. And it's just like super badass. I really enjoy the Phantom Carriage. Let me go through the 2025 stuff I saw so far. Okay.
Sure.
I saw Heart Eyes, which was
Valentine's Day horror or whatever.
Yes. Yes. So this is what really excited me. Not only did I see a lot of people in the theater for it, but I saw a lot of young people.
Dude, I will say, I'm sorry to interrupt, but yeah, I will say horror is back with the kids.
I
love to see it. Like there was I'll get to like one of the things that I watched was The Wild Robot, but apparently there was like it did well in theaters, and then there was like another surge of like high ticket sales for The Wild Robot, and there was a lot of speculation that it was kids buying tickets to The Wild Robot and then sneaking into Terrifier 3.
That's awesome.
Some things just never change. That's my little tidbit about modern horror. What did you think of Hard Eyes? Yeah.
It was a fun movie, man. It was a fun movie. It didn't take itself super seriously. It had a really lot. It knew the genre really well. It knew the suspense genre really well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was like definitely very tongue in cheek, and definitely like we're here to have fun. And if it made like young people see what I think is so cool about slasher movies, I think that would be pretty neat. Everyone seemed like they had a good time. Let's see, what else did I see from this year? I saw Companion. Have you seen Companion, Greg?
Not yet, but it's on the list for sure. I really do want to watch it.
I went in just like stone cold, like didn't even really, someone told me the concept of the movie, but I forgot what it was. And so like the whole concept was a reveal. And then I was like, oh wait, I did know that. Yeah. It's one that I would definitely recommend as few trailers as possible. What I will say without spoiling anything is that what I was really surprised about is that, it's like a Tarantino movie, not in the sense that it's as good as a Tarantino movie, but it is, they first of all, like do the trunk shot is what got me thinking through this. That's what got my attention. There may be even more, but really the movie kind of has this Reservoir Dogs of like, we have a small number of people, something has gone terribly wrong, and no one knows who they can't trust. And I felt like that was just very, very Tarantino of them in general. And it seemed like a lot of loving, intentional, like, nods to things like that. And I'd say so far, I think I gave Companion like a 40 out of 50, but so far that's my highest of the year. So it can enjoy a reign on top until something better comes out. It was a fun movie. It's not as good as like an Ex Machina or something like that, but it's way better than a Frey-Eyed. Jesus Christ.
Afra-Eyed.
This is like that movie if they put forth the slightest amount of fucking effort and understood what AOL Instant Messenger was.
Well stated.
Other 2025 stuff. I saw The Monkey. I went and saw The Monkey yesterday.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I was fucking shocked, and apparently a lot of people are, that it is not related to 1988's Monkey Shines, which had a toy monkey on the trailer or on the cover. I also watched that because I thought I needed to see it first. I did not. In Monkey Shines, there is no toy monkey. It never happens, not once. I did not know this. What's weird is it is about two brothers and like an evil, awesome monkey. I'll get into that later. But the monkey this year, half the movie is about two brothers 30 years ago with this monkey. So I swear to God, it's like someone made a sequel to what they thought Monkey Shines was from seeing the cover. It's like what this movie is like.
They saw the poster and made a sequel.
But they're not related. Joe Dante, or sorry, no, god damn it, George A. Romero directed Monkey Shines. I had it in my head that it was Wes Craven, so I had tons of misconceptions. We'll get into Monkey Shines. The Monkey is a pretty fun horror movie. it very much had like hard eyes with a lot of like, it's just kind of not taking itself that seriously. Like there's even like times where they're just seeing like the consequences of what they're doing adding up, and it's just like fucking funny, and there's some kills that are hilarious. It's just basically the premise of the movie is there's just this old toy monkey. Oh my god, my cat just entered the room. Hello, Frankie. You're not supposed to be able to open that door.
Oh no.
Why it's like the hang out?
It's like the Velociraptor in Jurassic Park. It's slowly learning how to open the door handles.
If Frankie had thumbs, she knows how everything in this house works. Like, you could not stop her if she had thumbs. But the monkey is, it's just this toy monkey. Someone has to wind it up, and it just causes, like, a disaster to happen that kills people. The monkey doesn't do anything. And I was having fun, and it was a good time. And then, somewhere in the third act, I was like, oh, this is Paranormal Activity with a Funko Pop. And then I realized I was going to be seeing a lot more of this released direct to Shudder, because they don't even have to have like a Robert Englund that keeps coming back. They just have this toy that anyone can use. It can be anywhere for any reason. Anyways, the monkey's all right. It's not that great. It's fun enough, but like, it left me bummed out because I foresaw my future. It just hit me hard. There are a couple of I've been watching. I don't want to get into all of them because there's, you know how I get when I'm hyper fixated, but I've been watching a lot of just like liminal type of like vibey kind of dreamlike movies. One of them I checked out was Nowhere, was really good. Another good animated movie, Perfect Blue, is really good. If you want to get into some weird stuff, The Flying Luna Clipper is a trip. But I wanted to talk about Horrors of Malformed Men. You ever heard of it?
No, I don't think so.
It is a really weird Japanese horror movie that was banned for a long time for being fucked up and weird and shit.
All right, I'm sold already.
So, this is what really shocked me. It's basically like an Island of Dr. Moreau thing. That's like an old legend. Without spoiling too much about either, Old Boy ripped its entire plot fucking verbatim from this movie.
Oh, boy.
Like, it's like, there's like one or two small details changed. I could not fucking believe how exactly like Old Boy this was. And I'm not sure, I don't know much about the making of either. If Old Boy is an intentional homage to this, rock on. Beautiful. If not, you got away with the heist of the fucking century, guys. Like, holy shit.
Well, you know, you got like your Seven Samurai and then Magnificent Seven. It's narrative remakes told in a different kind of way.
It is what it is. Happens. Yeah. And I think I can close out on that. There's a few other things, but check out my Letterboxd if you want to know more.
Yay! Denny will be posting screenshots of a month recap on her Instagram, I'm sure.
That's a thing I do now.
I like it. It's cool to look back and be like, damn, I watched a lot of movies this month, or Denny watched a lot of movies this month. Stuff like
it's
that.
It's pretty sweet. If you start sending me yours, I'll do it too. Hey. Greg doesn't have a Letterboxd. He's a critic or purist.
Yeah, that's right. It looks like an Excel spreadsheet. This will not be on Instagram, folks. Not happening. The stuff I did watch, the first thing I'm going to say is that this is not something I watched, but rather something I read. I read a book.
Ooh, that are our, do you need to talk
on,
about
hold
it?
Hold on, wait, hold on. Friend of the show, Joseph Conrad, wrote a book. A sci-fi.
Ooh.
Yeah, so hold your judgment. Despite the fact that it's a book, it was a very good book.
Hell yeah.
It's an awesome sci-fi novel. It was a quick read, honestly. Like, I found myself, like, done with it in record time recently. It's fun, man. It's like, I was kind of expecting, I don't know what I was really expecting from him, because this is his first book. It's published a book that he wrote. And I was like, my friend wrote a book. I have to try it. And I had a blast with it. I like... It's been said many times on this podcast that I'm a huge fan of space dread. And just, like... Space is scary. Space itself is scary. And one of my favorite movies, Alien, a lot of the fear in that movie is just like, damn, isn't space terrifying? And I'm like, yes, it is. And there's, like, a lot of little, like... There's, like... action set pieces going on in this book, and it's just like he'll put in like a little reminder like, hey, an asteroid the size of a pumpkin seed could like rip through the wall of this thing and everyone would suffocate, by the way, and just think about that. It's stuff like that. It's just like really cool. It's like really enjoyable. It's science fiction, and the science and the fiction are married together. There's a lot of science talk, but it's not explainy or mind-numbing or boring, and there's a lot of action and all this stuff. It's cool. It's a really cool book. I didn't say the name of it. Terminal Velocity, folks. Check it out. It's on wherever you get books, basically. Terminal Velocity.
That makes me really happy to... Like, he's a super creative guy. I don't know him as well as you do, but, like, about a decade ago when I was staying at him and Colby's place, it was the place they lived after y'all lived together.
I think I had moved out, and then he moved in.
I stayed up until about 3 a.m. with him talking about, like, a comic he was working on, and just, like, he's such a, like, creative guy and very passionate about what he does, and I'm really happy to hear that he's brought, like, a project all the way to completion. That is really, really hard to do. That's really cool.
And there's, like, a really cool afterword, too, where he just kind of talks about the process of how it got made, and he's just, like... Like, this was 1,000 pages. It's just like, this was, like, this long. This character was someone else completely. He kind of, like, gives little details about, like, the process behind it. Inspirations behind the story, that kind of thing. It's really cool. That's the only book I read. Movies I watched. I'm trying to catch up on 2024 stuff, so I watched... it was Valentine's weekend, so we watched the Florence Pugh and Andrew Garfield movie, We Live in Time. It's on Max. It was okay. It was, I liked the two leads. It's really charming, but it was just like, conceptually, I was scratching my head a lot. Like, why are we telling the story out of order? It didn't really service the narrative in any way. And then kind of towards the end, there's like a couple of core conflicts that I'm just like, I think I'm on neither of their sides. Like, I was just getting kind of frustrated with the characters by the end of the movie. It was fine. It's a, you know, little 5 out of 10 romantic movie. I mentioned it a minute ago, but I did watch The Wild Robot. Checking more stuff off on 2024.
Yep. Greg, it's okay. We won't tell your parents you went to see Terrifier 3. You can tell us what you really watched.
No, I didn't. Could have just bought a ticket myself. I'm a big boy. So now I've watched all of the animated nominees for Best Animated Feature for this year's Oscars, and I think this is like second from the bottom for me. I didn't think it was all that great. It seemed like it felt like it undercommitted. It felt like, did you watch The Wild Robot?
Yeah, I really enjoyed it.
I thought it was just like, I don't know. I feel like Flo did a similar thing just in a much more interesting way.
I would agree.
I liked the art style. I thought I was going to get something a lot more interesting with that art style. It felt like it really undercommitted and just kind of gave a paint-by-numbers sort of narrative. And there were a couple of points during the movie where it just, like, introduced new characters, and they were kind of presented like we should have known who they were already. I don't know. It was a weird watch. I felt like everyone talked a little too much. I'm not saying... Yeah. Well, not everything has to be... Yeah, not everything has to be without dialogue-like flow, but I just, you know, I was expecting something very different here.
Well, I watched it before flow, and so I wonder if maybe my perception would be different if I watched them in the order you did. That's just more what I'm mulling over.
Yeah, maybe so. The other thing I watched... You can watch this movie on Hulu, folks, and I will recommend this movie just to Denny, because I think it's just okay. But... Nicolas Cage's Arcadian.
Ooh.
Are you familiar with this at all?
I'm not.
It's a post-apocalyptic, kind of low-budget creature horror kind of movie. So Nicolas Cage has got a couple of boys They're 15 years, 15 or 16 or whatever, and he's got to take care of them in a world that is overrun by the scariest looking fucking monsters I've ever seen in a movie. They look awesome. I'm just recommending it to you because the creature effects are outstanding. They are so scary. I want you to watch it just to see what you think. I thought it was great. The rest of the movie around it was pretty weak, not gonna lie. I feel like I got tricked into watching a teen drama at certain points. I was more than a little disappointed, I gotta say. But, like, there's creature terror moments in that movie that I'm like, this is some of the best I've ever seen. So I would recommend it for just Denny. I think a lot of other people would be bored with it overall, though. On the flip side, it's kind of on the opposite end here, a movie that I would recommend that Denny steer clear from. It's the new Bob Zemeckis movie, Here.
I was warned by Greg, yes.
I had to text you a little bit about it, just in case you felt like watching it. But I described Here as anti-Denny cinema.
An act of aggression towards me, Mr. Zemeckis.
It is boomer nostalgia, self-congratulatory, beating the point of each scene over my head, all that jazz. It's just like...
gross.
If you're not familiar, it's the movie where it's Tom Hanks and Robin Wright. Camera's in one exact spot in the living room of a house. The camera does not move. It just stays stationary, and it goes back and forth in time through all the people that lived in the house, even like the dinosaurs, and then like modern times.
There's a play like this called The Dining Room, and it sucks too. So their idea is not even original.
Well, it's based on, I think, like a series of comics, and it like you're never in the same time for more than like 30 seconds. So you just like shows a
How
little snippet
of it?
This. It's like an hour 40, something like that.
Jesus Christ.
Well, you're just like, it goes back and forth and back and forth and then forward and then back and then further back and then here. It's just like, telling it. It sounds
exhausting.
It sounds like a mess. It sounds exhausting. It's pretty easy to follow. It wasn't that hard. The gimmick kind of worked for me personally, like the stationary camera and all that. But like, it was just so fucking corny. And like,
yeah.
I wasn't about it in the end. It was, yeah, boomer nostalgia rubs me the wrong way.
You should check out Adult Swim Yule Log. It basically does the same gimmick infinitely better than what you just described.
I have heard about this.
It was on the Jingle Fuck. That's
another. Oh, yeah. That's right. Where did I hear about this recently? But like
My
I said,
own podcast, that's right.
Yeah, I must not have been there that time. So the movie we're covering today is Monkey Trouble from 1994. I decided to watch two other movies from 94 to close out this segment.
Ooh.
I watched Speed. I had never seen it before.
All right.
Mm.
I'm guessing what the other one is. I'm wondering if it's on theme.
Probably not.
Oh, okay.
Speed was good. What else can I say? Like, it's, you guys have seen it. Hard to take your eyes off the screen with that one. And the other one was D2, The Mighty Ducks.
Ah.
Yeah. It was, you know, much more of a kid's movie than a family movie, but I settled into it and just, you know, you're watching kids rollerblading through a mall in 1994 and you're like, well, I guess I'm having a great time, actually.
That's actually amazing. That sounds like cover art for our podcast if AI made it.
That's right.
Not that we didn't try. And by the way, it was a whole phase last year. Don't go back on the Instagram. But
that's right.
I thought you were going to say that you might have watched completely unrelated to Monkey Trouble, just completely serendipitous, not tied in at all, 1994 release Pulp Fiction.
I thought
it's a talking point for the show.
I knew you thought I was going to say Pulp Fiction. More on that here in a second, folks. We're here for the main event, though. It's time to talk about Monkey Trouble. Like I said, 1994, it's a prime rental. That's very unfortunate that you're probably going to have to spend some money on this. Critiker review of the week, Denny. It's been a hot minute since we had one of these. Not a lot of reviews on Critiker, but I did find one on Letterboxd. This user, semi-interesting, gave it 1.5 stars. I'll read it as it's written. Harvey Keitel telling the monkey to shut the fuck up on set because it won't stop asking him if the coke in Bad Lieutenant was real.
Critical review of the year.
That's right. We're off to a
strong. Yeah.
We're off to a red hot start. Oh, man. Now, Danny, monkey trouble. Let's get into it. We have to deal with the trouble of this monkey. So, what is your relationship with the movie? Because this is actually a good story. If our relationship with the movie starts in the same place, I love this story. But had you seen this one as a kid or anything?
Yeah, no, I wore this tape out as a kid, actually.
Nice.
I had this, and I had Dunstan Checks In, and my mind has mixed, like, them and Zeus and Roxanne together as, like, one movie. Mm-hmm. So I think Dunstan Checks In got all of the interesting parts, from what I can tell. there was very little of monkey trouble stored in my brain other than the cover and a very memorable actor who only did one movie in 1994 and had no other notable work come out in the same year as this movie.
Hang on a second.
But most recently, Greg asked me to bring a tape I didn't care about to test his VCR over at Thanksgiving, and apparently we watched about an hour of Monkey Trouble without realizing it.
Yeah, we were just like sitting in the nostalgia closet that I described on last week's episode and just kind of shut ourselves in on the little couch there. We were doing like basically like live audio commentary, just talking about this dumb little monkey movie, having a good old time. And yeah, time just melted away. I don't really remember much of the movie from that viewing, but that's my relationship with it, is that's the first time I had seen it, was the first 45 minutes plus in a closet with Denny. It was a blast.
Yeah. That's the most fun anyone's ever had with me in a closet for that amount of time. I'll tell you that much, Greg.
Heyo. Oh, I love to hear it. Well, we do have a Movies for Win first. This is the first movie in a themed with monkeys that actually features a real monkey.
The official position of our podcast is that there is no distinction.
I know, but I had to celebrate a little.
I'm proud of us. I'm really proud of us.
We're really evolved. Just like the monkeys.
Hey!
Yeah, where do you want to start with this thing? I've got a lot of notes, and should we start with Harvey Keitel and his
accent?
Gonna
say, I don't know where else to start, but when this little girl says, I can't find my monkey, and she gets on the phone with Ving Rhames and says, calm them motherfuckers down, I'm sending the wolf. But then this motherfucker shows up instead.
It was something we joked about in the closet, where, like, he just must have wandered off set from Pulp Fiction and just also been in this movie. And was just trying different stuff.
He's like, listen, man, I'll fuck around with a monkey as long as you want to point a camera at it when I'm on break, okay? It's fine.
That's right. It's just like, you know, he's so dressed up and proper and, like, you know, he's just such a stern, calculated character in Pulp Fiction that he just cut loose, tried an accent, dressed however, and just, you know, unfortunately kind of abused the monkey a little bit.
Listen, man, like, I am not joking. The amount of time between my favorite and least favorite performances of an actor could not be closer. I don't think there's anyone else in all of history who pulled off such a range of good to terrible within 1 year. I can't tell you how much I love the wolf in Pulp Fiction. I love everything about the way he's presented. Harvey Keitel, it's like he just is the wolf. He's not Harvey Keitel, he's the wolf. And then this shit is going on. It's literally like, he must have done this to like decompress and blow off steam and like not have to try very hard at anything after such a demanding performance.
I respect that theory, and I think you're right. But yeah, it does feel good to have a front runner for a negative granny, like on movie one of the year, basically. Worst
front
character.
Runner for a Hall of Fame inductee, dude.
No kidding. Yeah, just him, not even the movie. Yeah, we were also kind of joking about, like, we had this gangster. Kids movies back then, for some reason, a lot of the times, the villain or whatever in the movie, there's for some reason, there's always, like, a mob connection, for some reason, a lot of these movies. Mm-hmm. Blank Check is another one. It's just like, oh, this is just mob-connected people. Kids are going to have to deal with the mob. I don't know what that was. But, yeah, one of the guys looks like... Go ahead.
I think it was Harvey Keitel's agent fucked up, skimmed the script, and was like, oh, this will be a good crime drama for him. What's it called? Money Trouble? Awesome.
Ooh, whoops. I got the typoed version.
Technically a crime drama. Harvey Keitel cast against type, not as the mafia member, just as the little shyster racist bum. The performance is racist, and so is the character, and... so is the movie. Why not? Let's just call it a racist movie while we're at it.
I think we're within our rights to do so.
Yeah, sure. One of the central characters is a white person playing a minority of, honestly, nondescript. It just seems like a general kind of racist-y feel. I don't know what to call it.
He does call himself... an innocent gypsy towards the end, or something.
Well, that's a slur. So let's not count it as.
That's what I'm saying. He thinks the character.
I know. Yeah. That is a slur. So that's Harvey Keitel and the script's point of view is that this is a character worth dignifying with the nationality or ethnicity of a slur, but nothing further. So
that's right.
Let's just focus on how he was in Reservoir Dogs and Pulp Fiction and Bad Lieutenant. Why don't we just ignore that he was ever anywhere near this?
And National Treasure. Of course. Who could forget? Of course.
He's a treasure hunter.
Treasure.
Greg.
Yo.
Did you know that kleptomaniac monkeys are actually God's apology for allergic stepdads?
Now, you gotta understand what's... What I had next in my notes was the a little note about the Air Bud Cosmic Justice Theory update. So
yep.
Yeah, you get divorced parents, but an allergic stepdad. You get a pickpocket monkey. That was what I had in my notes. I'm glad we. Oh man, great minds and all that.
I'm gonna be honest. Like, the further we dive into this, the lower the threshold is getting for, like, a pet with a special talent. Like, your stepdad's just allergic, dude. Like, it's like, most kids had to have a dead parent to get an apology from God like this. Your dad's just a pilot. He's gonna be dead eventually when, like, he's in the plane that hits the World Trade Center, obviously. But, like, right now, he's just flying places.
Oh, my God. I mean, it is less cool. Is it less cool than a dog playing basketball? It's certainly more frowned upon by society. People want to see a dog play basketball. People don't want to see their wallets get stolen by a little monkey.
I'll say this. As a kid who hated sports and loved monkeys, the choice is easy. I don't know about everybody else, but...
Yeah, when you put it that way, I wasn't really... As a kid, I was not into playing sports very much. Playing, yes. Playing organized sports, not so much. Just make the dog do it for me? I would like that, but then you gotta still play too, so I guess that's kind of
exactly.
Bullshit.
Well, the dog won't bond with you unless you can play. He's not like a normal dog. He ball his life to Air Bud.
Yeah, well, this monkey will steal for you as long as you kind of take care of him a little bit, so.
See, that is like... so much more than any pet has ever given back fiscally. gotta say.
I appreciate the monkey returns here. I like
sure.
it. Sure. So yeah, at what point did you... Well, you'd seen this one a bunch as a kid, so I guess I can't really, like...
This was also, like, watching it for the first time, though. I probably remembered the racist archetype that had the monkey and the girl in the backwards hat. That was probably all I really remembered.
Did you forget so much about this movie because it was so damn boring?
Yes. In fact, okay. I was like thinking, like, we had like a lively discussion about Dunstan Checks In, and I even said that, like, that was passable as like a fun kids movie. You know, like, that was actually something that, for its ridiculousness, well, it was a ridiculous kids movie. Ridiculous kids movies are fun a lot of the time if you do them well. Yeah. I honestly, I don't have a lot of notes on Monkey Trouble, because it is, there's not a lot to say about it. Like, one time she goes to an empty place where there's no one but her, and does a very low-rent home aloning, way less violent, not as innovative. It's just, it's a very meandering movie. There's very little happening. It seems that they're stretching everything out as long as they possibly can.
Yeah.
And that's probably why there wasn't really much to remember. It's been in True Movies for When Fashion, have both gotten sick since we originally said we were going to record this episode. So I actually, right. it's been over a week since I've watched it. So even then, I looked up the plot of this movie before we did this, because I was like, is there really as little as I remember? And I was like, oh, yeah. Like, this plot on Wikipedia is way too detailed because there's so little to say. They just have to, like, and his shirt was red in this scene.
I think I remember it well enough because it was boring enough that I was free. I had a lot of free mental space to kind of make a lot of notes. So I do remember a fair amount of it because I wrote it down, basically. Yeah, at this point, I was saying that I'm downgrading it from high jinks to low jinks. It's just...
So, like, all monkey, no trouble. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. False advertising, but not where you'd think.
Yeah, you actually do get, like, a lot of monkey time, which is pretty great. Personally, I don't want to lean too far into the future, but I've moved on. Like, there's just a way better monkey in Monkey Shines, I'm going to be honest.
I'm looking forward to it. I will say, what is the name of the monkey in this one? Finster. Finster is the name of the actor that plays Dodger, the monkey.
Dodger is a terrible monkey name.
Stupid, bad, dumb. Plug for a baseball team.
They didn't even have the right to, because I looked really closely. That is nowhere near an L.A. Dodgers hat. I played on the Dodgers in Little League. It's a fucking hat that says Dodgers in cursive. Like, it's like, they didn't even, like, have the team's collaboration in it, dude. Like, they could have named the thing fucking Orange Head or something, because it's just an orange hat or whatever. I don't know. Like,
maybe it was legit, but she was wearing it backwards pretty much the whole movie, so you could barely see the logo except for one scene.
I looked. I waited for it. It was not a fucking MLB official hat. No chance.
Oh, well. Well, are we all that surprised, honestly?
They never said, you know, like the Los Angeles Dodgers.
Well, don't you know?
They said he's Dodger because he likes the hat. You assume that a Dodgers hat that is a baseball cap style hat is a literal baseball cap, but in this case, I assure you, it is not. It is a hat that a hipster would shit their pants over at a Goodwill, but it is not an MLB brand hat.
I gotta look at it again, but I think it was actually a legit band. It's like, that cursive thing is one of their alternate logos, but we'll see. That's enough hat talk, Denny. I gotta say, that's enough hat talk.
This is a hat podcast that discusses monkeys who have feelings about movies, Greg.
We are not adding any more gimmicks to this thing. I want to see if you do remember this, because it confused me when we watched it together, and it confused me even more this time. About 30 minutes into the movie, another girl is in the family. This girl shows up, and they never introduce her. They never explain who she is. Was she the kid's big sister? Is she a babysitter? Is she an aunt? Like,
I believe she is an older stepsister from the plot synopsis I read today.
Oh, I also, stepsister!
I forgot about it. I was confused, but it did not... I would never have remembered it until you said so, but I believe she is an older stepsister, if my memory from the Wikipedia... Open in another tab that I don't care enough to check.
That's the only thing that makes sense.
Let me checked. I'm checking.
Like, her intro to the movie is she comes into the bedroom and says, "Hey, come on, time for dinner." "No, now," kind of thing. It's just like, who are you? Yeah, why are you bossing her around? Stop this. This is like, it's
God, now I can't find her in the fucking
we'll have to go with stepsister. It's the only logical explanation.
Well, I control F stepsister and it's not there. That's what's interesting me.
Yeah, you typed in stepsister and Google started autofilling a whole bunch of stuff.
Okay, anyways. I must have seen her somewhere else. I don't even know if she's in this fucking synopsis. I don't know. I might have made this entire fucking thing up. Tom's biological daughter, Tessa, occasionally babysits Eva and her toddler brother, Jack. That is her stepsister. Tom is Shooter McGavin, her father, a cop, allergic to fur, most notably.
Who we haven't mentioned that it was Shooter McGavin this whole time, outside of stepdad's allergic. Yeah, it's Shooter McGavin, by the way.
Literally, earlier that weekend, I don't even remember what movie it was, but he showed up in something we were watching, and it was SLC Punk. I didn't mention it, but that's what I want to do for the movie. He showed up in SLC Punk, and we were all like, we all agree that that guy is just Shooter McGavin, right? Like, that's just his name. That's, like, the only role he's ever played. That's just who he is every time he shows up, right?
I had to do a quick double check to make sure that Happy Gilmore didn't also come out in 94, but we're good.
Yeah.
96. All right.
No, he was still on the rise. He used this movie to elevate his career. He used it as a stepping stone, I believe, to the ultimate role of Shooter.
That's unfortunate, but also it worked, so whatever.
So I discovered something when I reviewed the plot synopsis that I think we've missed, and it's a fundamental issue with this movie, Greg.
Mm-hmm.
This movie is about a kid who sucks at show and tell. What kid has ever been like, oh, I can't think of anything for show and tell? I just can't think of anything I like that I want to bring to school and tell everyone about. Guys, I worked with kids until I was about 28. This is not a realistic problem, okay? This movie is like a fundamental misunderstanding of a child. Like, it doesn't work this way.
And it's like, it doesn't have to impress us, is the thing. If it's like an eraser, like, her biological dad's a fucking pilot. He's probably brought back, like, some pen from Egypt or something that she's
motherfucker.
Like, check this shit out.
I got told I had to stop bringing wrestling merchandise to show and tell when I was in second grade. Like, that's,
how dare
like,
they?
There's censorship of good ideas, not a lack of ideas. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly. Like, yeah, it does. This movie feels way too written by an adult. In air quotes here. It is written by an adult, and it is abundantly clear. Maybe not a childless adult, but definitely one that...
one who doesn't understand children. I don't know how many they conceived, but they didn't spend time with them, I'll tell you that much.
Yeah, it really doesn't feel like it. And I haven't spent a whole lot of time with kids that can talk.
Maybe a nameless adult child that no one really thinks about much is like him, like writing as a parent, like, oh yeah, sometimes kids just come and go and you don't really think much about it. And everyone was like, fucking what, dude?
I don't think that's right there. Well, one thing I did like, though, and I will give this movie a heap of praise real quick, very briefly, for two things. Because it's written so adult and from an adult perspective, it's realistic in how everyone reacts to seeing a child with a monkey. No one's like, get that nasty thing out of here. Every adult that the girl Ava encounters with the monkey, everyone's like, holy shit, a monkey! That's so cool! Where did you get
that?
Best
day of my life! Yeah.
Whoa! He can do cool tricks! That's awesome! Where'd you get that? Like, I loved that. It was nice. It's annoying when, in kids' movies, like, every adult is just a mean asshole.
For no reason.
And that wasn't the case here. And the other thing I will give this movie credit for is a depiction of co-parenting that I don't see in movies where, like, the parents are divorced or whatever. There is a scene, well, I'll let you talk, because maybe I'm not as informed, but, like, usually in these kinds of movies, mom and dad, if they're separated, fucking hate each other. And, like, it's, oh, I gotta go to dad's, oh, you're a stupid dad, or whatever. Or, like, dad and stepdad are just like, ugh, hey, Mark, or whatever the fuck. This movie had a scene where they thought Eva is stealing things, And all three parents sit together on the couch and decide how to handle it as, like, a group.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like a very tension-free co-parenting relationship that Ava has with, essentially, a mom, a dad, and a stepdad. It's
That's
something
pretty cool.
You don't see it in, especially not in kids' movies. Like, and especially from, like, the 90s. But, like, it's, I really enjoyed that.
Can you believe that, like, they're all so stupid an 8-year-old could still fool them when they cooperated? Like, imagine if this was a dysfunctional family. Like, if they, like, for the writing of this movie, this family had to get along, because if they were any less competent, she would have just, like, rode this monkey wave to the top and become a mom boss or something. Like,
three engaged adult brains couldn't solve this problem. You know, I think she's going places anyways.
Absolutely.
I do like her mom is basically like marrying dudes who have careers that you pick when you're 8 years old. Like, I'm gonna be a pilot, I'm gonna be a cop, and yeah, her next stepdad is going to be an astronaut. So
did you grow up thinking inventor was a job because of
I
thought you could just like, they'd like put you in a room with a bunch of like sprockets and shit like that, and just you'd fuck around until you came out with an invention, and you'd either be like lauded or ridiculed. I thought that was a profession.
Levers, light bulbs. Light bulbs that play music. I'm on it.
That's
the government's gonna give me $1 million. Yeah, that was one of the things that I wanted to praise the movie for, but it is also, like, because it is a fully functioning family, there is no real conflict or tension. It's, the movie is so boring because what is at stake truly? It's what you said. She won't have anything for show and tell, and, like, her whole motivation is, I want a pet.
Right.
And like, everything standing in her way, at the worst comes to the worst, is she will not have a pet.
Right. It's the antagonist had the most to lose. Like, I was like, the only real source of tension in the movie was that Harvey Keitel was about to get his fucking kneecaps broken because he double crossed the mob. Like, he had the most on the line in the movie.
But here's the thing. I wanted that to happen.
Sure.
Maybe not, you know, as graphic.
That would have been really awesome if, like,
G-rated movie.
She just goes a while and he doesn't pull anything and just lives happily ever after. And then she just gets a note that says, like, the family has taken care of your issue. We will request a favor from your monkey at a certain date. That would be so fucking cool if she, like, took his spot and she was like, you want the monkey, you go through me. That's monkey trouble, too. Monkey in Manhattan.
Oh, no. Whoa. Look out, Vancouver. This boat's coming right for you.
Whoop, whoop.
Hell yeah. Oh, what a great movie that was. I don't know, man. It is hard to talk about something so boring. And like I said,
we've gotten a lot out of it, but it's tough.
The stakes, I'll continue on the stakes. The stakes are low. I think you really just wind up rooting for the monkey to not have to go back to Harvey Keitel and his nasty little son.
That's who has the most on the line, the monkey. That's a good point.
The monkey. You got to look at this from the monkey's perspective.
That's
see?
A good point.
I empathize
with trouble,
him the
most. After all.
Yeah. Oh, it's not like, oh, the trouble is the monkey. The monkey is the one with the trouble. Oh.
Monkey Trouble, Monkey Trouble 2, Troubled Monkey. Now that's a movie.
Ooh.
That's the monkey has, like, he's having trouble adjusting, and he's been through so much, he has to go to monkey therapy. Who would write that? Where are we going to hire some sort of monkey therapy script writer? Is anyone offering money for this? Did someone say they need me to do this?
If we could share a brain, I think we could pump this out in 30 minutes. Of all the things to Legacy sequel, by the way, Monkey Trouble is...
Monkey Trouble 2, Troubled Monkey. That's a fucking title, man. I'm married to this. This is my new fucking self-actualization project.
That's right. Well, Benny, I gotta say, like, we talk shit about this movie being boring, and, like, I was, like,
have
starting
you heard
to
our
type...
podcast?
Hey, shut up.
I'm kidding. I love our podcast.
Right? I was just, like, typing out a note about how it's boring, like, we could have done, you know, whatever else, maybe not a lot to talk about. And then the monkey steals a cop's gun! Did you forget? The monkey stole a cop's gun and shot at people with it in a park. Hell, I think, yes.
I think that was a reference to Kurosawa's Stray Dog, if I'm not mistaken.
Stray monkey! Whoa!
Whoa!
Whoa! Oh, shit. Dude, like, a fully loaded police service revolver had to weigh more than that monkey. And he's, like,
almost shooting
Harvey Keitel accurately. Like, he's barely missing.
That, like, let me read how that was worded in the synopsis. Because it was, like, I was, like, was I zoned out for this? Honestly, it's,
It sucks you back into the movie, for sure. That's the effect it had in me. Is
let
when,
me find
like,
it here.
Yeah, like, it's a pickpocket monkey, and it's just like, you never expected him to take, like, a cop's gun.
Yeah.
But I'm glad he did.
It says that, Eva's family, along with Tom's fellow police officers, search for Eva and discover that Dodger has saved her after stealing Tom's police revolver and has been occasionally firing a shot in Azro's direction to keep him at bay till the law arrives. So this monkey was working in cooperation with the police force to arrest this this impoverished grifter.
I like... The way they worded it, it's like, oh, he was just, you know, keeping him suppressing.
Just being like, hey, don't you move over there.
No, don't go anywhere. These are warning shots. And implying that the monkey is not trying to kill Harvey Keitel. Yeah. That's bold, you know? Like,
see, he was using the threat of violence, not actual violence.
You know, you can, like, you can interpret art how you want it, but I feel like this is wrong.
This is a propaganda view reading of Monkey Trouble.
Yeah, exactly.
The monkey was working in collaboration with the law the whole time.
The monkey knew
monkey
that he could count on the
police.
The monkey knew he could count on the police to show up and not shoot the person firing the gun.
I think
person,
he was showing his true cop nature that he just started firing at a poor person. As soon as he had a gun in his hand, he was like, oh, fuck yeah. Bang, bang, bang! This is the best job ever!
Dodger got drunk with power a little bit there for a second. He didn't give... God didn't give him a marksman monkey. That's what I'm saying.
Imagine if that scene was reshot, but more like the first scene in RoboCop. And they instead, like, fucking Murphy this little fucking Dodger into Robo Monkey with a jetpack. And, like, but he does is do organ grinder monkey tricks. He doesn't fight crime or anything. He's just, like, the station's mascot.
Oh, I love it. Well, I think the very last note I had, it's something I don't like. I think maybe because I'm an adult now, but they did this part where, like, they unhitched the trailer from Harvey Keitel's truck.
Yeah.
And he drove away. And then, like, the trailer was rolling downhill and it's played for laughs, but it's, like, heading towards a Little League baseball game. It's like, it's going to kill those kids. And then, like, ground levels out and it just kind of stops on its own. It's like, oh, that's not what I thought was going to happen. I was expecting to see a crash through the friends. I didn't think they would show any kids die, but the threat was there.
Yeah, that's very fair. I'll clean up a few stray notes here. I wrote that Fingers the Monkey could be taken in a lot of ways. the monkey's name is his name under Mr. Keitel is Fingers. They definitely say Fingers the Monkey a lot in this movie, and man... Let's hope we're talking about a monkey named Fingers when we're saying that.
Yeah.
And I also
put quotes around Fingers, please.
This is just like E.T., except he just pisses and shits everywhere and doesn't help you.
Doesn't the girl also have Reese's Pieces? Doesn't she try to get Reese's Pieces?
I don't know. I don't remember.
Oh, something made me think of that. Oh, shit. I could be wrong, but I have some weird memory that she tried to give him Reese's Pieces at some point. Yeah, he pissed. the monkey pees on the bathroom floor, and she's like, rips off two squares of toilet paper and is like, ah, damn, it's not working. So she grabs the roll and starts wiping it. I'm like, are you stupid? Now the whole roll is wet with monkey piss.
Well, that's, you're also completely overlooking her chores arc. Like, one of the there were two reasons she couldn't have a pet. Mm-hmm. One was her allergic stepdad. Two was she was not responsible enough to do enough chores. And so that was actually subtle and intentional character development. She didn't know how to do her chores because she was so irresponsible. You could say that in this situation, she was the monkey being trained. And that's an auteurist interpretation.
I like that you used the term chores arc. So
listen, man, it's nothing compared to the show and tell arc, but I'm working with what I got here.
It got resolved at the end and I forgot it was a thing. Yeah. Turns out the real monkey was her little brother all along.
I was gonna say, we haven't even touched on the fact that she like hates her little brother, and like it's like she's just like, why do I have such a piece of shit little brother? And then at the end of the movie he says monkey and reveals yeah. that there is a secret monkey. We didn't even get into the secret monkey arc. There's so many arcs, and that's why... And I, one of my notes was just, in terms of act structure, I don't know where we are. Like, this is... Structurally, I don't know what this movie is or where to pinpoint any of it. Like, there's just a bunch of stuff happening for 90 minutes.
It is a 5-minute first act, a 1 hour and 20-minute second act, and then a 5-minute third act. It's very strange.
Yeah, Shooter McGavin could only make 2 days of shooting. That's why they call him Shooter.
Yeah. Oh, shit. Yeah, he got the nickname for this movie before Happy Gilmore came out. I like it. I love it. That's great. Okay. You think you're ready for some gimmicks here?
Yes, sir. I am done with monkey trouble.
Yeah.
We got way more out of it than when you said you had a lot to talk about. I was like, oh, good.
Does he? How exactly?
No. Yeah.
Oh, no. No, I had a lot to say about it. I had a lot of fun talking about it, and I was just, like, thinking of new stuff, like washing the dishes. I would be like, oh, I guess it was kind of annoying that, like, she got caught shoplifting and every other customer was staring her down, like, shaming her. It was very annoying. Fucking,
bro, that was a situation where I was like, somebody fucking... spend $500 on this poor child right now and buy them the goddamn grocery store. They're clearly in a bad space. Why are they humiliating her?
Yeah, exactly. Every other customer and employee just stops what they're doing and is just like, this child, this poorly dressed child,
implying that the employees are paid enough to give a fuck if a kid steals from that store.
Oh my gosh. They're so prissy, man. It's just like the Home Alone shopkeeper, yeah. Cash register lady. Fucking snitches, man.
Yeah, dude. Snitches get stitches.
Snitches get stitches. I've never seen a child steal food, and I never will. If you know what I'm saying.
Hey.
So,
Greg helps a lot of children eat, I think, is what he just told us.
I also just, you know, I haven't seen it. So.
Yeah, me neither.
Denny, if you have one, what is your favorite line from Monkey Trouble?
Executive producer Ridley Scott.
Wait a second.
I'm not joking.
Title
credits. I was like, that's probably the peak of this movie. I don't think I'm going to get a better one than that.
This is a detail that I seem to have forgotten.
My runner-up was, I don't even remember who said it, but someone said, I just wanted to spend time alone with my monkey. And I was like, that is like a... I want that on my tombstone.
I like it. Yeah, there it is. Ridley Scott Productions.
Yep.
Ever heard of him, folks? I only had one favorite line. It's from the beginning of the movie, where discount Robert De Niro is meeting with Harvey Keitel in the back of a limo, showcasing the monkey's thieving talents. And one of the gangsters says, Drake, this ape's a genius. And Harvey Keitel says, it's a monkey. Corrects him. It felt like he was speaking to us. And I was like, thank you, Harvey. Well, thank you so much.
Our official position is that there is no distinction, Greg. He was not speaking to us.
I know. This is the one time. I'm kind of living it up here. Let me have a little fun. We have a new gimmick of the week. So the original Movies for When You Want to See a Monkey theme came out before the introduction of the gimmick of the week. So there wasn't one then, so there's no legacy gimmick. So we had to come up with a new one. I collaborated with Denny a little bit, and we have come up with the moment of monkey business.
Yeah.
Open to interpretation, Denny. What is your moment of monkey business from Monkey Trouble?
You know, I'm going to go with, we saw this monkey do a lot of things a trained monkey is meant to do, but I ask myself, can you really train a monkey? You know, like, can you really interfere with nature? I mean, they're like us before we came down from trees and fought wolves, you know? I think if I learned how to come down from trees and fight wolves, I would shit right in a bathroom sink, Greg, and that's what my boy Dodger did. Took a feral style shit in the sink, and that was some monkey business. That was monkey business at its finest, if you ask me. Nice. What say you?
And you can't train that.
Excellent reference.
I almost interrupted you to say climb down from a ski lift to fight wolves, but
yeah. Well, that's our ancestors. It was a metaphor, so we could understand.
I know. I was just, you said that, and I immediately thought of Disney's Frozen. my moment of monkey trouble is, I don't know if you remember this part, where we're on the beach trying to outrun Harvey Keitel. Monkey parasailing on the kite. Monkey flying on the kite. He's just hanging on for dear life, and you could tell it's a doll in the wide shots, but it's just a monkey hanging off a kite, and that thing is whipping around. It's just so funny.
I have no memory of this. I must have zoned out something hardcore by the end. I was not entertained by this.
This is halfway. This is, I think this was the 40-minute mark of Act 2. So it was somewhere in the middle.
That could be anywhere.
I don't remember.
There's no way of knowing.
I don't remember which part of Act 2 it was, but I know it was in there. Oh, man. Yeah, that's my moment of monkey business. Maybe I'll find that clip for you. No, I'm not going to do that. I probably have to rent the movie again. That's not worth it at all. Okay, Denny, what did you give Monkey Trouble as a critic score? How would you rate this one?
I gave it an 18 out of 50. This is a bad movie.
18 out of 50. 36 out of 100. 3.6 out of 10.
You are fast at math, let me tell you, buddy.
It is not hard.
It math. Is.
Not this math.
I have dyscalculia, so all math is hard math.
Dyscalculus. You should have. Exactly. This calculus. Well, I gave the movie, Denny, I gave it a 3 out of 4. Sorry, not a 3 out of 4. A 12 Jesus. Out of 4. A 12 out of 40, which is a 3 out of 10. Sorry.
See, that's why
we're in the same
one fraction at a time.
Yeah, exactly. It is a 12 out of 40, a 3 out of 10. You and I are in the same Dodgers ballpark with this one.
Hell yeah.
It is not a very good movie. There's stuff I like about it. I think the monkey performer, Little Finster, there was awesome. I just wish we were given a little more of him. And just like, I wish more stuff happened. I wish there was a little bit more whimsy. Not full kids movie mode, but the movie was too grounded. It was too realistic to be fun. And the stakes were non-existent. They didn't do enough with what they had, and that's a real shame. You got Harvey Keitel, you got a talented monkey, and you produced a racist character and a... monkey that almost shoots a racist character. And that's just not good enough, I'm afraid.
I'd say if you've got Harvey Keitel, Shooter McGavin, and a monkey, and you still fuck it up, that's on you, Ridley Scott.
Who okayed this? Ridley! Answer for your crimes. Oh, man. I completely... You're going to remind me of that.
Insane name to have appear on the title credits. I was like, what the fucking shit? What?
That's one of those plot twists, man.
Yeah.
No, that's great. Yeah, that's it. We've done it. We have covered the uncoverable. We have discussed... We've made entertaining out of what is most boring. Denny...
It's all uphill.
What are we doing? We kind of discussed it already. What are we doing next week? We're kicking off the monkey theme. What's monkey movie number two? We talked about it a little, but what do we got?
My understanding is that we have changed it to Monkey Shines due to my misunderstanding, but I will also do Planet of the Apes if you'd rather.
No, I want to do Monkey Shines. I haven't watched either yet.
Cool.
I am in the mood for some Monkey Shines. I have watched the trailer for it, and I cannot wait to talk about my observations. I was also looking for the toy monkey in the trailer, and I was disappointed to find just a regular real monkey.
I was legitimately, 45 minutes into the movie, making sure I was watching the right one. I was like, this is the, I actually did pull up Reddit, and it was like, yeah, there's no monkey. There's no toy monkey in the whole fucking movie. And I was like, what the fuck? I was like, structurally, it's way too late for this thing to show up is what I kept thinking, you know? But waiting for it. Anyway, we'll save it for next week.
Yeah, imagine you're watching Leprechaun. You see that poster, and then it's just like a regular Irish guy. Should I edit that out? I don't know.
I don't know. Ask the Irish. I don't think we're famous enough to get canceled. I'm not too worried about it.
Oh, I know we're not. I love the Irish.
Cancel us from fucking what? My own Instagram.
From what?
Oh, shit. I think everyone knows that we are not gonna, you know, make a whole movie with a racist character. You know, we don't do that. That's not us.
That's not us. When we're writing the legacy sequel for Monkey Trouble, we are going to make it racist character free, folks.
Yes.
That is the Movies for Win guarantee, is that when we write a screenplay, it will be devoid of racist characters.
And finally, I'm going to say finally, the Monkey Trouble franchise is ready to listen to the audience. I'm just going to say it. There's going to be a lot of transparency as we write Monkey Trouble 2, Troubled Monkey. And you know what? We're actually going to address the race concerns. That's right. We're going to address them in the script because we're both white, so we should be doing that, right?
Right.
No.
Danny, we have to. We have to stop ourselves, Danny. Please. Please, monkey, shine on me with a catchphrase. I don't know.
All right. For Greg the not-so-secret Stash Johnson, I'm Denny. Let's hope the meds work, Taylor. And this has been Movies for When! We already told you when. But you know what we didn't tell you? What's my cage again? I'm a monkey.
See my gun?
Just like him, the way he walked across the screen.